Why? What is the definition of why? For what reason or purpose? For what reason or what purpose? Why am I here? Why are you here? Why did your mom and dad get together? Why are you on this planet? Why? What reason has God put us here now? So many people, especially kids, ask why questions because they're curious. Develops our brain. Why? To understand what's going on around us. Why? It helps us make connections, to explore concepts, to learn new information. Why? I'm sure every day, or at least once a week, we say, why? Why did this happen? Why is this going on? Do you know that the Earth's oxygen, let's take a deep breath for a second. Earth's oxygen, this rich atmosphere, a product of photosynthesis, biological process where an organism like plants, algae, certain bacteria use sunlight, water, carbon dioxide to create energy, releasing oxygen as a byproduct. Oxygen, it's continuously replenished by photosynthetic organisms, balancing its consumption by animals in the process, respiration, combustion, to maintain a stable atmosphere, the concentration of 21%. While some planets might have small amounts of oxygen from the process, like the breakdown of water, they lack the biological engine of photosynthesis to create and sustain large quantities of it, which is necessary for a breathable atmosphere. Oxygen, colorless, odorless, tasteless, it's a gas, it's non-flammable, but it does help assist with flames. It's strongly paramagnetic in liquid form, which distinguishes it from other gas. We possess a high degree of creativity, abstract thinking, which forms the basis for complex reasoning and problem solving. We have a deep sense of our own self, our personality, the capacity of moral judgment, including the awareness of death. The human brain is so extraordinarily large and complex, consuming a significant portion of our body's energy. Just like our fingerprints, every individual's brain activity has a unique function connectivity profile. Humans have a significant expanded prefrontal cortex, which enables complex functions like long-term planning, logic, and abstract reasoning. There are people today, and there have been people for a long time, who want to brainwash us into thinking we're just here by chance. We're just simply here because evolution. We're simply here because two worlds have collided. Listen to how complex oxygen is. Listen to the complexity of what we have in our system and the ability to breathe. Everything in the earth that works together, the circle of life, so that we have air to breathe. The brain that is like no other and functions like nothing else. And we have heard that we're just here by chance, just by some chance. We're all here just by some chance. Many people today are brainwashing young people, old people, people of all races, religions, and colors to believe a lie. And I wonder this morning, is there any lies that we've believed about our earth, about ourselves, about creation, and about God? Why? For what reason? For what purpose? If someone wants you to believe a lie, what is the reason behind them wanting you to believe a lie? With that, we're going to go to a lovely story. Turn to your neighbor and say, it's a lovely story. 1 Samuel 17. One of all of our all-time favorite stories, 1 Samuel 17, starting in verse 1. It says, the Philistines now mustered their army for battle, camped between Soko and Judah, Ezekah, and Ephes-Nebiru. Saul countered by gathering his Israelite troops near the valley of Elah. So the Philistines and Israelites faced each other on opposite hills with the valley between them. Then Goliath, a Philistine champion from Gath, came out from the Philistine ranks to face the forces of Israel. He was over 9 feet tall. He wore a bronze helmet, and his bronze coat of mail weighed 125 pounds. He also wore bronze leg armor, and he carried a bronze javelin on his shoulder. The shaft of his spear was as heavy and thick as a weaver's beam, tipped with an iron spearhead that weighed 15 pounds. His armor bearer walked ahead of him carrying a shield. Goliath stood and shouted a taunt across to the Israelites. "Why are you all coming out to fight?" he called. "I'm the Philistine champion. But you, you're only the servants of a little man, Saul. Choose one man to come down here and fight me. If he kills me, then we will be your slaves. But if I kill him, you will be our slaves. I defy the army of Israel today. Send me a man who will fight." When Saul and the Israelites heard this, they were terrified. They were deeply shaken. "I defy the armies of Israel today. Send me a man. Is there any man who will fight me?" When Saul and the Israelites heard this, they were terrified and deeply, deeply shaken. 1 Samuel 17:16. 40 days, every morning, every night, the Philistine champion strutted his stuff in front of the Israelite army. We're going on to verse 23. As he was talking with them, this is talking about David now, Goliath, the Philistine champion from Gath, came out to the Philistines from the ranks, and then David heard him shout his usual taunt to the army of Israel. As soon as the Israelite army saw him, they began to run in fright. "Have you seen the giant?" the men asked. "He comes out each day to defy Israel. The king has offered a huge reward to anyone who kills him. He will give that man one of his daughters for a wife. The man's entire family will be exempted from paying taxes." Verse 26. David asked the soldiers standing nearby, "What? What? What will a man get for killing this Philistine and ending his defiance of Israel? Who is this pagan Philistine anyway, that he is allowed to defy the armies of the living God?" And these men gave David the same reply. "Yep, this is the reward for killing him." Verse 28. When David's oldest brother, Eliab, heard David talking to the men, he was angry. "What are you doing around here anyway?" he demanded. "What about those few sheep you're supposed to be taking care of? I know about your pride. You're so prideful, deceitful. You just want to see the battle." "What have I done now?" David replied. "I was only asking a question." Verse 32, "Don't worry about this Philistine," David talking to the king. "I will go fight him." "Don't be ridiculous," Saul replied. "There's no way you can fight this Philistine. There is no way you can fight this Philistine and possibly win. You're only a boy. And he's been a man of war since his youth." David persisted. "I've been taking care of my father's sheep and goats," he said. "When a lion or bear comes to steal the lamb from the flock, I go after it with a club and rescue that lamb from its mouth. If the animal turns on me, I catch it by the jaw and I club it to death. I've done this to both lions and bears. I'll do this to this pagan Philistine too, because he has defied the army of the living God. The Lord who rescued me, the Lord who rescued me, the Lord who rescued me from the claws of the lion and the bear will rescue me from this Philistine." Saul finally consented. "Okay, go ahead," he said. "May the Lord be with you." Verse 40. He picked up 5 smooth stones from a stream and put them into a shepherd's bag. Then armed only with his shepherd's staff and sling, he started across the valley to fight the Philistine. Goliath walked out toward David, with his shield bearer ahead of him, sneering in content at this ruddy-faced boy. "Am I a dog?" he roared at David, "that you come at me with a stick?" And he cursed David by the names of his gods. Verse 44, "Come over here, and I'll give your flesh to the birds and wild animals," Goliath yelled. David replied to the Philistine, "You come to me with sword, spear, javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of heaven's armies, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. Today, the Lord will conquer you. Today, the Lord will conquer you, and I will kill you and cut off your head, and I will give the dead bodies of your men to the birds and wild animals, and the whole world will know that there is a God in Israel. Everyone here assembled will know that the Lord rescues his people, but not with the sword and spear. This is the Lord's battle, and he will give you to us. As Goliath moved closer to attack, David quickly ran out to meet him. Reaching into his shepherd's bag, taking out a stone, he hurled it with a sling. He hit the Philistine in the forehead. The stone sank in, and Goliath stumbled and fell face down on the ground. David triumphed over the Philistine with a sling and a stone, and he had no sword. Then David ran over, pulled Goliath's sword from its sheath. David used it to kill him and cut his head off. And when the Philistines saw their champion was dead, they turned and they ran. We're going to end right there for now. You know, in every story, how many of us seen, in most movies, how many of us know that there is always seems to be an enemy. Always. This enemy in this story, he was large, and I guess he felt he was large and in charge. He was tall, over 9 feet tall, strong. He was a little bit overconfident. He had massive weapons. If we were to think, here's an enemy, this is the one enemy that David faced back then, I wonder our enemies today. Now, there are local enemies, and then there are, how many of us know, worldly, global enemies. And many people have said that, you know, for their biggest enemies, if they were to think about the world picture, China, Russia, and Iran are the biggest enemies of our time. If you were to ask people, you know, around the world, what are the biggest enemies? What do we have to watch out for? Other countries, they would say, no, Israel is the biggest enemy of all time. They want to fight and kill everybody. Everyone's pointing fingers at everybody, right? But we do this globally, but we also do this locally, because admit it, every single day we have gotten good at pointing our fingers, always forgetting that no matter who we point at, wait a second, I still got fingers pointing back at me, right? And I wonder, truly, around the world, no matter what people say, yes, there are enemies. Yes, there are people who want to destroy America and Christians. But what, honestly, do you think this morning is my greatest enemy? And I would think, if we were honest, we would say ourselves. Because we're all born selfish. We know that from the beginning of the time, every human is born selfish, born broken, greedy, like to manipulate, like to control, use dark thoughts. Many people spend 80% of their day being negative. Many people today, it's gotten worse, the loss of compassion for life, seen by how we treat one another. Rebellion in hearts and minds. So many people unwilling to see the truth of what is really going on inside of me. What is really going on inside of us? The biggest enemy. What is my biggest enemy? What is your biggest enemy? What is the biggest enemy we face today? Well, in the story today, what did this enemy do? He did what a lot of enemies do. He intimidated the people that he was opposing. How did he intimidate? He used what he had. He used his strength, but he used his what? He used his words. Goliath used his words, his advantage, to manipulate and control the people that he was controlling. Goliath, this enemy, used everything he had to make sure that every single person he faced, they felt small. They felt a little bitty, like a little person inside. This one man was able to take a whole army and make them feel weak, make them feel afraid. This one man, because of his voice, because of the aura around him, this one man made a whole entire army afraid. They were afraid because of one guy. And he defied this army, but he also defied their religion, their God. This one man made every man feel weak and small, but he also was attacking their God. The enemy's tactics, proud. He was arrogant. his words, anger, torment, and hate. It says 40 days that he went out every single day, 40 days, every morning and every night. And you know why he went out every morning and every night? How many of us have ever heard that it takes 21 days to change a habit? It's totally wrong. It's totally false. It's actually over 60 days. It takes 60 days. And you know, in 60 days, we could completely rewire and rechange our brains in 60 days. This man spent 40 days every morning, every night, because you know what he wanted to do? He wanted to take control of the minds of those people that he was opposing. This enemy, there are men and there are women who are just like this guy, who force their way, who push their way to take advantage of others. And so they'll go every morning and they'll go every night and they'll use words to manipulate, to control other people until their brain gets rewired and they start thinking, yeah, he's probably right. Yep, she's probably right. Constantly intimidating to ensure that these men stayed afraid. It's kind of like if we turn on the TV today. How many of us turn on the TV and we watch something and get afraid? How many of us turn on the TV and get worried? How many of us open up our phones? We don't have to watch TV anymore. We have so much information on our phones. And how many of us have opened up our phones and seen something and got worried and afraid? And how much information out there with the government, with politics, with men and with women, the information that they have, that they push, it is simply to control and try to control every one of us. Just like this enemy controlled a whole army. And then there's this man. This actually wasn't a man yet. He was a boy. You know, this guy here, 13 to 16 years old. This guy was 13 to 16 years old. And he steps on the scene. Now, his dad asked him to go to bring gifts to the commander, check on David's brothers, but he was asked by his dad, because we know that the brother was mad that he was there, right? But he was asked by his dad, so he was being obedient. Don't we love it when our sons are obedient and they listen to what we tell them to do? And that's all that David was doing. He was being an obedient son. He was listening to his dad. He was listening to instructions, just like this instructions here. David was listening to his father. And when he got there, you know, instantly his heart, man, he was so frustrated. He's looking at all these men that he used to look up to. He's looking at these guys that he used to, like, hold in such high regard. And he was looking at them, and you know what they're doing? They're trembling. They're shaking. And they're afraid. And he's like, what are you afraid of? And out walks Goliath. Just one guy, one man. And David is perplexed in his brain. This, let's just call him 14, this 14-year-old, he's perplexed in his brain. What is going on? As he's thinking, man, my older brother, he's so tough. Man, he's so buff. He used to slap me around, beat me up. And I used to think he was the toughest guy in the whole world. And look, my brother, he's trembling. Look at King Saul. How many armies has he defeated up to this point? And yet, what? King Saul, he's running and hiding from one guy. David starts getting frustrated. David starts saying, enough. What are you boys, men, doing? You're not acting like men. You're acting like wimps. What is going on here? So he says, what would I get if I kill this giant? What would I get out of this? And they said, man, you're going to get a wife, fancy new house, car, your family. Exempt from taxes for life. Wow, that's a beautiful thought right there. Oh, man, how many of us would just love that one thing? Forget the wife, right? Let's get the taxes. How many of us know we always have haters? We always have haters. David, when he starts asking questions about who the haters are, a hater is somebody who greatly dislikes someone or something, always critical, always negative. Hear one thing and immediately go to the negative. I would like to say this morning, though, David's hater, he was a hater because he knew his older brother what he should do, but he was too afraid to do it. And so he hated his brother because he knew he would. The oldest brother hated David because he knew this is what I should do, but I'm too afraid to. So I hate my brother. I'm going to call him names. I'm going to put him down because I know he's not afraid to do what God made me to do. We know next, David talks with King Saul. King Saul, this man was a doubter. If you look up doubter in the dictionary, a person who questions, they have lack of faith in. And he told, what did he say to David? He said, there is no way you can kill this giant. There is no way you can kill this giant. Why did he say there is no way you can kill this giant? Because in his heart, he felt like there was no way he could kill the giant. And if there's no way in his heart he could kill the giant, he doubted there's no way that this little boy could. He doubted David's ability because he doubted what? Himself. Many people doubt themselves. Many people hate themselves. What do? They project it on every single person around them. Hating, doubting, the lack of faith, the lack of trust. And it comes out in the words we speak. You shouldn't do this. You can't do this. You weren't made for this. You aren't made to do that. You can't be great. You can't go after this. You can't be all that God wants you to be. Why? Because haters and doubters, they are so hateful and angry the things they couldn't do and didn't do and afraid to do that what? They put it on everyone else. But thank God, King David, this young man, wasn't king yet, wasn't going to listen to the haters, wasn't going to listen to the doubters. Why? Because, you know what, he had a good resume. Every time you apply for a job, technically, what is it, they want you to have a nice little resume. And so the resume that David says to the king, what did he say? You know, I am a young boy who takes care of my father's sheep, 14 years old. He goes, there's times when lions and bears come after the sheep, and I go after them with a club and beat them to death. I can't imagine, you know, a 9-foot-tall giant. I really can't imagine going after a lion or a bear either. This 14-year-old was fearless. But why was he so fearless? Because, you know, there's one thing that he said. I trust in the Lord. I trust in God. I'm not afraid to lose my life because he said, God who rescued me from a lion or bear, he's going to rescue me from this giant. I'm not afraid because I believe fully and trust in my God. 14 years old, not afraid. God protects me. God rescues me. David goes out and he gets ready to take down Goliath. The king offered him a sword, but he denied the king's sword. And he says, nope, I just need 5 smooth stones. David takes 5 smooth stones and he takes his sling, which is this bag or this cloth on the bottom that has 2 leather straps on the side. David obviously practiced. David obviously knowing how to use a sling. This is the only thing that he wanted. He was going against a man who was 9 feet tall. He was going against a man who had a sword. He was going against a man who had a shield. And he didn't want any of those things. He wanted the thing that he knew that God had given to him. What was it? It was his sling. 5 smooth stones. Some say, why did he grab 5? They say, well, maybe because he had few other brothers. So after he was going for Goliath, he was going to go take down their other brothers. Maybe simply just to think he took 5 in case I miss with 1. Maybe I need 4 more. Maybe He picked five because the weight in which he carried them gave them a good balance and a security and a confidence when he was ready to throw that sling. David was going into the fight with rocks against somebody who had a sword. It's amazing, many of us today, we face so many enemies. Some of us look in the mirror, we don't realize sometimes the enemy that we have within, because there's so many things that we ignore inside of us and ignore this great enemy that every one of us have to fight, the selfishness that lies, the brokenness in every one of us. We forget and we don't want to oppose this enemy that's in here. So what do? We take it out on everybody else. We go after everybody else. Just like the man in this story, Goliath, he was a man, he was an enemy who wanted to take down the chosen army of God, the one army, the one people who believed and hoped and trusted in the one true God. David probably wasn't an expert at his sling, but he had faith, he had trust in God alone. David, when he runs at Goliath, what did he say? I come to you with sling and a stone, but more than anything, I'm coming to you in the name of my God, because it's in God's name there's power. It's in God's name everything lies. It's in God. It's not in me. It's not in my ability. It's not in my talent. It's not in my age. It's not in my looks. It's not in how I walk and talk. It is in the power of God. So I come to you in the name and the power of my God. And David, we know, he takes one little rock and he slings it and he throws it at Goliath and he kills him, hits him in the head and takes him down. David, he faced a giant, he faced lions and bears through his life. He's faced different kings and wars and battles and even evil in himself. We know that he was, at times, he made big mistakes. He did hurtful things towards God. He did hurtful things towards other people. David, throughout his life, he faced many different challenges. Just like us this morning, many of us like David, we face similar things. We face battles with life. We face death, famine, sickness, earthquakes, hate, evil, darkness, the devil. David was a hero in his time, not because of the mistakes he made. Thank God that he wasn't held for the mistakes that he made. But David was held in high regard for the good and the heart that he had for God alone. David was a hero in his time. Jesus Christ, the story, the Bible, the book, everything we know rests on this man, Jesus, who came to this earth, who was God's only son, born of a virgin, partly God and partly man. Jesus, who lived 30 years as a carpenter, grew up in a family. He had half siblings. He had half his dad is like a stepdad, but his mom was his mom. He grew up just like a normal child, but he was different. He was special, and everybody knew it. Went to the temple as a young kid, and he wanted to just sit there and ask questions for hours. Jesus, who grew into this man, this Son of God, who changed the world. Still the largest religion is Christianity, even though Christianity and Catholics, the numbers are shrinking. Jesus, Christianity is still the largest in the world. Why? Jesus changed the world. He changed people. He changed humanity. Every single person that he came into contact with, people who were lost and broken, they were healed instantly. And whether it was a physical issue, whether it was an emotional or a mental issue, they were healed and delivered instantly when Jesus saw them. Jesus was a hero, obviously the greatest hero of all time, as he delivered people from evil back then. And just as Jesus confronted the devil and showed us how to walk in victory when we deal with the devil, I mean, there's no evil, and it still reigns. Hate seems like it still grows. Jesus, who confronted the religious, Jesus, who was tempted by the devil, but he never sinned. The devil who wanted Jesus to change his identity, to change the direction of his life. The devil who tried to get Jesus to cave in, to give up to the path God had for him. But Jesus, what did he do? He kept fighting back. No, this is what is written. I stand on the word of God, who was someone who said what? I just want to do what God wants me to do. I want to go into the public, and I want to share the way that I think God has put me on this earth to do. As a man, as a husband, as a father, as a preacher, teacher, as an evangelist, was shot and killed by someone who all he spent his time doing was going to college campuses and giving students a microphone so that they can have a conversation, a public, easy debate back and forth about what is true, what is right. A man who wasn't afraid to go out and to talk about things that are really kind of difficult in our time and day to face. This man, Charlie Clerk, I think, was someone who was facing a Goliath of our time. He was willing to stand and to fight for college kids so that he could help them find the truth. This was a man whose life was taken from this world at too much of a young age, since 30-something, who was fighting Goliath. Because how many of us know, they say that 90% of kids who come from a Christian background go to a secular college, always walk away from God. 90%. Why? Because the professors who sound educated, professors who sound like they have all the reasoning in the backup of the world, they're not giving empowering kids the ability to think. They're brainwashing them. And so here's a man who wanted to stand up with reason, a man named Charlie Kirk, who wanted to fight for college kids simply to get them to think about truth. A Christian who, unfortunately, his wife and his kids now lost probably to them everything. Young kids who won't see their dad again till the day that they pass. This man who was trying to do God's will. And many people, how many of you probably have said, you know, why? For what reason? For what purpose? And sometimes, and maybe in this moment, we don't know the reason and why he was taken from us and why his life ended in such a horrible thing when he was just simply doing a really good work for God. It's one thing to tell people, this is what you are. This is what you do. See, this is how the devil operates. He's such a good liar. He tells people, this is who you are. This is what you do. Because his lies are meant to control and to manipulate and brainwash. Whereas Jesus, his word, what? It gives us the truth and the ability to think for ourselves, to think and to be who God has made us to be. And right now, those lines are grayed, where people don't understand where the brainwashing is coming from. People are pointing towards Christianity. People are pointing toward Israel, the government, the politics, the president. Do we really think the president is the reason for all of our problems? We honestly think all the politicians, it's all their fault. Family, it's all their fault. But how many of have spent years blaming one person? How many people spend their life blaming and judging one person? It's funny because people hear one thing and they want to crucify somebody on a cross for one thing they said. People hear one thing someone said. President, Charlie Kirk. And what do? They crucify them on a cross because they said one thing they didn't like. One thing. And how many of us fall into that same situation? How many of us have ever crucified someone because they said something that we didn't like? How many of us get angry and frustrated and hate starts moving and anger starts flowing because someone said one thing that doesn't agree with me? So I'm going to crucify them on the cross. This man, Charlie, he gave his life to try and speak the truth of God as how God enabled him to do. And he lost his life this week in a tragic, tragic way. And many of us this morning, we remember, we honor the great things that he did. Remember the great things that he said and that he stood up for. But it's also to ask ourselves, the same hate that killed him, unfortunately, lurks around some of us this morning. The same anger that killed Charlie Kirk lurks around many of us in humanity this morning. The same things that bothered this guy and his friends and the people that were in his life, unfortunately, lurks around some of us. Because maybe we're not going out with a gun and killing people, but we are with our words, putting people down. What did Goliath do? He intimidated. He wasn't, I'm going to use my mouth, I'm going to use my size, I'm going to use who I am, my power to intimidate you. I'm going to close with a story this morning, Mark chapter 5, verse 21. Jesus got in the boat again and went back to the other side of the lake, where a large crowd gathered around him on the shore. Then a leader of the local synagogue, whose name was Jairus, arrived. When he saw Jesus, he fell at his feet, pleading fervently with him. "My little daughter is dying," he said. "Please come and lay your hands on her. Heal her so she can live." Jesus went with him, and all the people followed, crowding around him. A woman in the crowd had suffered for 12 years with constant bleeding. Verse 26, she had suffered a great deal from many doctors over the years. She had spent everything she had to pay. She'd gotten no better. In fact, she'd gotten worse. She heard about Jesus, so she came up behind him through the crowd and touched his robe, for she thought to herself, "If I can just touch his robe, I will be healed." Immediately the bleeding stopped, and she could feel in her body that she had been healed of her terrible condition. Verse 30, Jesus realized at once that healing power had gone from him. So he turned around in the crowd and asked, "Who touched my robe?" His disciples said to him, "Look at the crowd pressing around you. How can you ask who touched me?" But he kept on looking around to see who had done it. Then a frightened woman, trembling at the realization of what had happened to her, she came and fell to her knees in front of Jesus and told him what she had done. And he said to her, "Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace. Your suffering is over." Verse 35. While Jesus was still speaking to her, messengers arrived from the home of Jairus, the leader of the synagogue, and they told him, "Your daughter is dead. There's no troubling the teacher now." Jesus overheard them and said to Jairus, "Don't be afraid, just have faith." Jesus stopped the crowd and wouldn't let anyone go with him except Peter, James, and John, the brother of James. When they came to the home of the synagogue leader, Jesus saw how much commotion and weeping and wailing there was. He went inside and asked, "Why all this commotion and weeping? The child isn't dead, she's only asleep." The crowd laughed at him, but he made them all leave, and he took the girl's father and mother and his three disciples into the room where the girl was lying. Holding her hand, he said to her, "Talitha kum," which means, "Little girl, get up." And the girl, who was 12 years old, immediately stood up and walked around. They were overwhelmed and totally amazed. Jesus gave them strict orders not to tell anyone it happened, and he told them to give her something to eat. And so I close with these two things, this story, the parable. There was a woman who bled for over 12 years, and there was a girl who died at 12. The woman who bled for 12 years is said that she suffered at the hands of doctors, and she spent all the money she had trying to find professionals to get better. But what happened? She didn't get better. She got worse. This, to me, this woman symbolizes how many spiritual lives of people are today. The state in their mental mind, in their emotional sense, spiritual, physical sense, they're going to every single wrong person and spending and giving everything they have to find one thing that they're looking for. And they're all the while, they're not going to God. Many Christians, they say, "Yes, I'm going to God. Yes, God, 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 God." But yet they still have hate, anger, fear, insecurity, evilness in their heart, and rebellious. This woman bled for 12 years, and she trusted and looked to everybody else but God. And I wonder today how many of us are emotionally, mentally, physically, and spiritually worn out. Because what we're trying to do, what we're trying to accomplish, We think we're on God's path, but we're actually on the opposite of it. It's one thing God said, Jesus, while he was here. He said, if you aren't working for me, you're actually working against me. If you're not working for me, then you're working against me. So many people want to take the Bible, dissect it. Well, God didn't mean that. That's not what God said. I don't have to do this. I don't have to do that. God hasn't put me here for this. Why? Because they want to think in their head, I'm here. God's here for what? Me. Is God here for us, or are we here for him? And if we're here for him, that kind of changes the story. There was a 12-year-old whose dad ran to Jesus and said, Jesus, help my daughter because she's sick and she's dying. Jesus, taking his time because he was helping somebody else who was suffering. It's another cause of frustration. How many of us were always waiting on somebody who's doing something and something else, right? And so this young girl who's 12, we have no idea how long from the time that the dad left his house to the time he got back, but his daughter died in the process. Dead. 12 years old. Can't imagine any one of us losing our precious kids in that manner, sick. He didn't go to anybody else. He didn't run to a doctor. And maybe he did, just not stated. Who did he run to? He ran to Jesus. Jesus was taking his time, but he did show up. Many of us were in this time and mind frame of waiting for Jesus. We're just thinking he hasn't showed up yet. Many of us thinking like this dad and the mom who was there probably with the daughter who saw her daughter die while she's waiting for her husband, right? And waiting for the guy to come back. Waiting on him, waiting on the man. She was the one who was there, probably holding her daughter. What? Wow, she died. But that's not how the story ended. Why? Because Jesus showed up. Jesus showed up to the house. In both of these stories, Jesus delivered and healed a woman who bled for 12 years. In the second story, Jesus raised a dead person to life, a little girl. Teaching us this morning, reminding us there is so much junk and evilness happening in our world today. But the challenge is, if we were honest, we're allowing the evilness, the hate, and the darkness to infiltrate the way that we think and the way that we feel. Many people this morning, they don't realize that they've allowed, that we've allowed somehow, for some reason, some of the dark things and dark thoughts and dark patterns into the church, into the body of Jesus. And so sometimes we find ourselves, without realizing it, on being part of the problem instead of part of the solution. Jesus alone heals, delivers, set free. He healed this woman. And then Jesus raised this little girl to life. And so we state this morning, Jesus alone can bring death back to life. Jesus alone has the power to heal, to provide, to inspire, to break darkness. Jesus Christ. And sometimes emotionally, mentally, physically, and spiritually, sometimes we don't realize what we allow and what we think, because we there's certain things, certain people that blind us with lies and manipulate. Jesus this morning, at the end of the day, he is why we're here. He is the reason we're here. Jesus is the reason that we're all here, that we're together, that we're alive, that we're kicking, and Jesus is the answer to life. And he's not something that we keep to ourselves. Jesus should be the number one thing that we share. If he can bring dead things to life, and if Jesus can heal and deliver like nobody else, he should be the one thing that we share with people. If Jesus is kind and loving, gracious, and gives new beginnings. If Jesus, when we die and go from this life into the next, if he's the one who grants us access into eternity, he is the one where these mouths should speak and sing about this morning. And so we ask ourselves a couple questions. We say, is Jesus then truly in my life, or have I allowed too many other things to govern my mind and my heart and my soul? Is Jesus the Lord of my life, or is he just a small voice that I allow to be there? Is there anything in life that I've allowed God to allow me to passionately go after? We know for David, he became king of Israel, one of the greatest kings of Israel ever. Why? Because he was a man who loved God. That's it. He was a man who loved God. Did he have his mistakes? Yes. But he's still remembered and honored as one of the greatest, or the greatest. Why? Because he loved God. He loved God. And so he passionately served God. We know for this man in the story, he passionately knew God, served God, and ultimately at the end gave his life doing what God had put him here to do. And so our theme is what? Why? The definition of why? For what reason or purpose? Why has God put you here? It wasn't a mistake. It wasn't by chance. There is reason. There is purpose. Just like he had a purpose. Just like he had a purpose. And obviously we know most definitely, you know, Jesus had the purpose. What is my reason? What is your reason this morning? And are we passionately going after why God put me on this planet with such beautiful oxygen that we get to breathe every single day? Romans 12:11, my last verse. Paul said, never be lazy, but work hard and serve the Lord enthusiastically. Enthusiastically. Rejoice in our confident hope. Patient in trouble, and keep on praying. When God's people are in need, be ready to help them. Be eager, practice hospitality. Bless those who persecute you. Don't curse them. Pray that God will bless them. Be happy with those who are happy. Weep with those who weep. Live in harmony with each other. Don't be too proud to enjoy the company of people. Don't think you know it all. Never pay back evil with more evil. Do things in a way so that everyone can see you're honorable, so that you can live at peace with everyone. Galatians 6:9. Don't get tired of doing what's good, because at the right time, we'll reap a harvest of blessing if we don't give up. David in this story had an enemy. And the enemy was bigger. He was better. He was more skilled. He was more talented. Way more years of experience. But it still was the enemy in this story that fell. And I wonder how many of us have enemies, but we're allowing the enemy to win. I wonder how many of us have enemies and inner things and outer things, people, places, things, past. Inner things, thoughts, emotions. It's an enemy, and we're still allowing it to win. Goliath, this giant, fell and died. He trusted in himself and nothing else. Whereas David, his opponent, who did he trust in? He trusted in God. This man that we honor today, Charlie, somebody who lost his life way too young. His Goliath of taking on young people, college-age kids, to simply try and get them to seek the truth, to find the truth. There's not multiple truths. There's not multiple gods. There's not correct multiple religions. The Bible says there's one God. And so he spent his life, the giant, because how many of us know there are so many people who are fighting for those college-age kids? Why? Because it's the next generation. It's the next generation. So here's a man who gave up his life so that this generation, he could everything, not to brainwash them, just to try and get them to seek truth for themselves. That song we played, Ever Found God of the Impossible. I wonder this morning, we're going to wrap up, I pray. I know I've said that already. But the song is called God of the Impossible. And in your heart this morning, do you feel that you still serve the God of the Impossible? That if he asked you to be a David, to take on a giant, that you're not afraid. God can do anything. This morning in here, do we still feel with our heart, mind, and soul, I know God does impossible things. God does great things. God still does miracles. God still does amazing things. And maybe, like one of the lines in the songs, maybe God's just waiting for some person to say, God, here I am. Send me. God, here I am. Send me. Have you offered? Have I offered? Have we offered this morning, today, last week, this week? God, here I am. Send me. Let's pray.